real blessings that God has bestowed upon man.
Get the one. You know, I feel that there's not a man that will disagree with that. We're ever so glad to have so many theocratic sisters in our midst, in the Archdiocese. Where would we be without you?
You know, we stop and think about it, the average person who is brought to a knowledge of the truth is helped along somewhere. You're doing fine work. The bulk of the work in the ministry is squarely placed on your shoulders. Why? Well, it's because you're freer, you have more time, and you take advantage of that by using your time wisely in a ministry. So we want you to know that we're cognizant of that. And not only are we, but the society very much appreciates your work. And more importantly, Jehovah God and Christ Jesus appreciate the work that you're doing. You see, your role in the earth is the most important one. And you fulfill it with a certain amount of dignity that humbles every male. We're so glad to have you with us. But you know, let's go back. Let's go all the way back to the time when woman first came on the scene. And let's pick up from there and to move forward. So now that takes us all the way back to the very beginning of the Bible, doesn't it? That takes us all the way back to the Bible book of Genesis and the second chapter. And this is what is stated beginning with the 18th verse. And Jehovah God went on to say, it is not good for the man to continue by himself. I am going to make a helper for him as a complement of him. Now Jehovah God was forming from the ground every wild beast of the field and every flying creature of the heavens, and he began bringing them to the man to see what he would call each one. And whatever the man would call it, each living soul, that was its name. So the man was calling the names of all the domestic animals, and of the flying creatures of the heavens, and of every wild beast of the field. But for man, there was found no helper as a complement of him. Hence Jehovah God had a deep sleep fall upon the man, and while he was sleeping, he took one of his ribs, and then closed up the flesh over his place. And Jehovah God proceeded to build the rib that he had taken from the man into a woman, and to bring her to the man. Then the man said, this is at last bone of my bone, and flesh of my flesh. This one will be called woman, because from man this one was taken. What an eventful day that must have been in the life of the first man, Adam, to awaken there and find beside him a beautiful complement. Yes, the Bible says that the woman wants to be a complement of the man. What does that mean, to be a complement of something? Well, a good dictionary would tell you that that means that which completes. A complement is that which completes. But now, are you and I going to understand from this that Adam was incomplete before the woman? Well, if this were so, why then God would be guilty of bringing about imperfection in the earth. And all of God's works are perfect or thus complete. So then we have to rule that out. Well, then a good dictionary would go a step farther and just saying complement means that which completes. That's true. But then it goes a step farther and it says that which is in front of one, in sight of one, and is standing opposite something that matches, looks or goes suitably, making a nice balance. Now don't you do that well. You make such a nice balance to man. You go suitably with man. You match him quite well. You know, oftentimes I'll come to the meeting for service and
by myself. And you know what I get? Do you have any idea what I get when I come and I'm by myself? I get eyeballed. Oh, yeah? And you know, I get eyeballed automatically. They're looking at what's not listening. My wife. Oh, I see this. I walk in the door and they're busy looking. Where's she at? Well, what makes you think I have one? See, oftentimes, you don't really know. You've never seen me before. But you just take for granted. There must be a sisterhood. I'm glad there is. But why is it that we look for the truth? It just it appears that something's missing when we're by ourselves. Isn't that true? And we begin to wonder then, I wonder where she is. Maybe she's sick. Yeah. What could be wrong? Well, it's because the two, those two that you get, man and woman, one and match, makes a nice balance. The man kind of looks off balance without the woman. And that's what the word compliment entails. You know, before God created Eve, what's the matter? Adam carried feminine qualities that were later put into the life. But Adam carried these qualities in perfect balance with his masculinity. You see, Adam was not homosexual in any sense of the term. Although Adam could be just as gentle and just as compassionate as anyone, just as patient as anyone. And you know, these are fine qualities that you women excel in. Oftentimes we wish that we had the patience that you have. You see, men just do not have the patience that women have. And you can pat yourself on the back as a woman that God created you so that you have the patience that you do. You know, it takes a lot of patience just to put up with your man, much less putting up with your children. Have you found that a child can get away with much more from the mother than he can from the father? Have you found that to be true? Do you know why it is? Why is that the child can get away with making more noise and doing more little things around his mother than he can with his father? It's because his father is an impatient man. And he'll just tolerate something so long. Maybe it's the kid making a little noise with his car. Mom will put up with that all day. At least he's out of trouble, she said. Let him play. But you know, that just kind of rubs raw the nerves of a man. There he is. He's having fun down at his little car. But that squeaky noise that he's making. But yet, the woman has that quality. And she needs that quality to take good care of her family. So when God created the woman, he divided the feminine characteristics from Adam, and he put them in the woman. So now we need, you women, to balance things out so that we can walk through life in the dignified way that the Creator wants. That's the law. But then why didn't God do it a different way? Do you think it's right to question God? Have you ever done that? Here's the question, God. You know, sometimes we hear people all over you, but question God. But you know, it's good to question God. Never doubt God. Never question God's wisdom. But it's good to question with an inquiring mind, with humility, to find out why God has done certain things. But never to question his way of doing thing, as if to cast doubt that his way is right, then that's dangerous. But to have an inquiring mind as to why we're here and why we function the way we do is good and honorable in the eyes of God. And he loves us for having an inquiring mind. So have you ever wondered why God didn't do things in the earth like he did in heaven? Well, you would say, well, he wanted the earth to be populated. That's it. He did. But he wanted the heavens to be populated. But he chose a different way of populating the heavens from the way that he populated the earth. For instance, the heavens, we have angels that are separate and distinct creations by God. There's no baby angel.
There's no reproduction in the heavens, sexually speaking. None whatsoever. Every angel is a separate and distinct creation by God. There's no sexes in the heavens, even though we refer to angels as males. But literally speaking, there's no sexes at all, whether male or female. They are creatures. They're merely referred to as males to help us have a better understanding of God's arrangement and relationship. Well, now, why didn't he bring about earthly creatures like that? How come, rather than creating Eve and having babies, why couldn't God have created a second Adam? An Adam 2, an Adam 3, an Adam 4, an Adam 5, an Adam 12. And right on up to billions of atoms. All separate and distinct. Why not? You know what the Watchtower says? I'm going to read it to you from the Watchtower. It says, God could have produced other men from the dust. Well, there, he could have done that. But that would not harmonize with the pattern of life found in other forms of earthly life. And Jehovah God is a God of harmony. Everything has to harmonize. It must be congruous with everything else that precedes it. And what did precede man? Oh, the animal. And how do we find animals? We find male and female, right? And what else preceded man? Well, the tree. Then we had male and female trees. And what else preceded man? The fowl in the air. We have male and female birds. What else preceded man? The fish in the sea. And we have male and female fish. And what else preceded man? The flowers and the vegetation. And how do we find the flowers and the vegetation? Male and female. Then along comes man, the peak of God's earthly creation. Well, then he has to bring about male and female in man. And thus, with the formation or the creation of Eve, man became a what? What did man become upon the creation of Eve? Who could tell me? Sister? Man became a living soul way before the creation of Eve. Sister? He became that. But what did man become upon the creation of Eve? Brother? Well, we laugh at him, but woman means female man, right? But what did man become upon the creation of woman? Sister? Absolutely. But what did man become? And he wasn't this until then. Brother Kassam. Oh, yeah. And we're still happy, aren't we? But what did man become upon the creation of the woman? Sister Lizzie. Well, it's true that she balanced the things out, but what did he become? Sister? Thank you, brother. You know what the eighth book says that man became? It says, upon the creation of Eve, man became a kind. Thus we have mankind. Because woman is a kind of man. But before then, we had no kind of man. We just merely had man. But now we have mankind. Well, now let's get back to our original thought. And that is the delight that women bring to the earth. You know, there's three reasons why you're here. You know what they are? That is women. Number one is to serve God. And of course, that's why we're here too, to serve God. That's foremost. But now the second reason why you are here, women, is to feel the need of me. And the third reason why you're here is to give the man of your choosing. These are the three reasons why you live and why you exist. And women are well equipped for this role. You know, your desire from childhood is usually to marry and please your husband and to get a son. Just think that. Think back to the time when you were just a little girl, just beginning to walk here. What did you enjoy playing with the most? Was it a doll baby? And as you begin to grow up, and you and your little brothers would play together, what did you want to play the most? I can still remember my sister say, "Let's play house." Always. It could be raining, it could be doing anything. Let's play house. Now, we may have wanted to go play cowboys and Indians, but the girls invariably want to play house. What I want, it's because of your mika. It's the way that God has designed you. It's the thought content that God has placed within your genes that function and make you tick. That's the difference between you and the male. So it's nothing out of harm. It's good that you have such desires, even when you're young. You see, every woman has what it takes to please a man. Some fail to use what they have properly, causing much unhappiness and sorrow. But what about you? What about you, sister? Do you please your husband in every way you possibly can? Do you strive to satisfy his hunger for tenderness, love, and respect? You know, every man has a hungering for tenderness and care that only you, Athena, can satisfy. You know, my wife and I, we visited the zoo down in San Diego. Have you ever been there? San Diego Zoo? They have a huge gorilla there in that San Diego Zoo. And his neck is ever bit wide. That's almost as wide as my shoulder. But that's his neck. And his shoulders are, and he stands, and the biceps on the gorilla. And the muscles in his back just ripple like the peaks of mountains. There is truly a symbol of masculinity. If I've ever seen it. And you know, the day that I was there, you know what that gorilla was doing? He was stretched out on his back. And he had his head in the lap of the female gorilla. And he had his legs crossed. And he was picking his teeth with a piece of grass. And the female gorilla was tenderly scratching his hair and popping fleas. And you know, he was living it up. He was enjoying every minute of it. Well, we're not advocating evolution here, but there is a similarity between the man. And that is a basic hungering for tenderness, love, and respect. What is it that a man looks for in a woman? Femininity. But then what is femininity? Femininity is being warm-hearted, is being cheerful, is being mild-tempered and poised. It means to be soft, vulnerable, modest, a bit mysterious, compatible, and yet sympathetic. We can say that all of these things go to make up that feminine personality. Where men like to display their masculinity, women like to attract and please. Men like to explore and move about. Women like to settle in one spot, build a nest, and lay eggs. They're all alike. You see, a man's psyche is active, it's aggressive, and it delights in conquest, whereas a woman's is passive, and it delights in surrender. So we find that a man is always busy trying to show off his masculinity. How did you notice that? Maybe you have a son that's about 13 or 14 years of age. Have you ever noticed him standing in the mirror trying to show off his masculinity, flexing his muscles? Have you ever noticed that? You know, I remember when I was just a teenager coming up, about 13, I would wear a short-sleeved shirt. Short sleeve, mind you. T-shirt. And then, to show my muscle, I'd roll up that short sleeve. Have you ever done that? And then that shows that little A. And then we walk around and try to look up to show that masculinity that we have. And we'll brave storms. Just to show that we are men. We'll brave all kinds of dangers. You know, it's not an uncommon thing for a man to climb the highest mountain in the world, brave all the storms and the danger. And once he gets to the top, his little wife just looks up at him and says, "So you've been to Mount Everest, so what?" In other words, that's not what brings her joy and delight. Because she's made differently than the man. And the sooner we realize that upon marriage, the more happier the relationship will be. Yes, there are differences, no other way. What is femininity? We can say that femininity is many little things. It means to be kind, gentle, being a loving person, a quiet, mild spirit. The loving person. So when the Bible describes a capable wife, one that has garmented herself with femininity, ask yourself, sister, is it describing me? For instance, in Titus chapter 2, verse 4, it states that you should love your husband. But now what does it mean to love your husband? Now we know that all you sisters present this evening love your husband. Or at least you want to love your husband. But now what does it mean to love your husband? Well, you should cooperate with him. That's what it means. You should cooperate but never compete. You would recognize if you truly love your husband that you're not equipped mentally, emotionally, and physically or somatically for the role of competition. Not at all. You would never pit your mind against him. Not if you truly love your husband. Oh, you might recognize that you're quicker of mind than he is. Oftentimes this is the case. Man meets girl, and girl meets man, and they fall in love. And boy asks girl, please marry me. Girl says, I will. And boy marries girl. But you know what? Soon thereafter, boy finds out something. You know what he finds out? He finds out that girl is smarter than boy. That she's quicker of mind than he is. Well, maybe he's sitting down studying the watchtower, and he finds that she has the answers much faster than he does. But you know something else? Shortly after marriage, girl finds out something. Do you know what she finds out? Often it's not. She finds out that she's smarter than the woman. But you know, the woman that is truly the feminine person, even though she may find out that she's quicker of mind than her husband, she'll work extremely hard never to show that she's quicker in mind. If she is not the person that the Bible describes as a good thing, then she'll work extremely hard never to show that she's quicker of mind than her husband. If she truly loves her husband, she will speak well of him on every occasion, and he in turn will praise her, the Bible says, in the gate. And that has reference to praising her before all oncomers or onlookers. He will be glad to praise you. You know, Sarah set us a fine example, didn't she? You know, the Bible says that Sarah referred to her husband, Abram, as the Lord. Isn't that a fine example of humility, subjection, and submission? Oh, we're not saying that you should go around calling your husband Lord Daniel. Not at all. But what about the thought content behind that? What about that submission, that subjection, that idea of it all? That's the thought. Could you do that? Can you be that submissive to the man of your choosing? Yes, the feminine person subjects herself to her husband. She recognizes his headship. You know, scientists say that the cranial capacity of a woman is 10% smaller than that of a man. Science also has discovered that the skull of a woman is lighter than that of a man. So now this shows that she's just not equipped for the role of headship. Her role is one of subjection to the man. Her role is that of submissiveness, and that means that she should recognize that she is a woman and be glad to be a woman. Never want to be what you are not equipped to be. You know, sometimes we hear sisters say, just sometimes, not all the time, just every now and then, but we'll hear a sister say, oh, if I were an elder, I'd show them a thing or two. Or sometimes we hear them say, oh, if I were a man, I'd do this and I'd do that. As if to be wishing to be something that he's not designed to be. Do you know what that borders on? That borders on homosexuality. And you know what the devil is doing nowadays? He's taking women who want to be men. He makes men out of them. And you know what else he's doing? He's taking men who want to be women, and he's making women out of them. Haven't you seen them walking up and down the street? Haven't you seen men carrying their purses, running along the street, smelling good, just like the women, wearing their frills and their frocks, what have you? Walking grace is happening, and it's spreading. It's not a little thing. But homosexuality is something that is spreading, and it's all over the earth. It's not just here. It's not just in this metropolis area of San Francisco and Oakland, but it's everywhere. It's in the country. It's in the small town. But it all begins with a thought. Somewhere, individuals have wanted to be what they are not designed to be. And they've nurtured that. And the devil has helped them run along. And they'll find when they turn him homosexual. So never voice the thought of wanting to be what you're not cut out to be. Be glad to be what you are, woman. Your role in the earth is a beautiful role that Jehovah God has placed you in. Dr. Marian Robinson, a New York psychiatrist, said, women must learn the art of eternal acquiescence and deep altruism in dealing with their husbands if they want to find happiness. Well, now, what really is she saying in all these words? Well, she's saying if you want to make a go of your marriage, then you must learn the secret of giving consent without protest. That's what she's saying. You know what else she's saying? She's saying if your marriage is going to be successful, then you must have an unselfish concern for your husband's welfare. Do you know what else she's saying behind these words? She's saying, be right, sisters. Be right and act like you're wrong. Can you do that? Can you be right and act like you're wrong? If you have garmented yourself with femininity, you can't. But you know, sometimes we find women who are right, and they insist that the whole world knows it. Don't be like that. Have the humility to be right, and in time to act for the sake of your husband, as if you were wrong. Oh, we're not saying to sin for the sake of your husband, are we? No. But in small matters. Maybe your husband makes a comment in your family study, and then he says, this word here means blah, 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 blah. and you've looked it up. He didn't look it up. But you looked it up, and you know that what he said meant, doesn't mean that. But now right before all the kids, and he said it with such a dogmatic voice, wouldn't it be kind for you to be right and act as if you're wrong? What difference? If the word was given the wrong kiss, he tried. Why belittle him in the eyes of the children? Or even in your own? You know, maybe later on, he'll find out that he was wrong. But he'll love you for not correcting him there in front of everyone else. So at times, this wisdom on your part, to be right and act like you're wrong. Yes, there's a lot in this psychiatrist's statement. She's saying it's important not only to wait on your man, but also to like to be so. You see, there's a difference. And waiting on your husband and liking to wait on. Let me give you a situation, see how you come out of it. Let us say that you've been busy all day. In fact, this morning you had to get up and get your family off. You had to prepare breakfast for them. And after breakfast, you had to wash the dishes. And you had to get the kids ready for a field service. And you went out in the field service for a little while. Husband, wife, and children. And then you come in and you had to make a quick lunch. And so you've been able to do that. Then you got the kids ready again, and you come back to the meeting, and you've been here nearly 3 hours. That's quite a day, right? But now whenever you go home, you know what your husband's going to do? He'll find his nice, soft, easy chair, and he'll sit down there. And he may click the television on, and he may ask you to bring his house to him. And he sits there. But he can't do that. You see, there's dinner yet to prepare. So then into the kitchen you go. You slave you. And there in the kitchen, you're working busily, and you're preparing dinner for your family, and you put on this nice spread for them this evening. And it's late, it's almost 7. And, all right, so then you feed them. Now what? Your husband goes back to his easy chair. You know what you're thinking? You're thinking, oh, if he could help me with the dishes. You see, you're not going to suggest it. But if he would just take the initiative once and say, honey, I'd sure be glad to help you do the dishes. You know, just to have him nearby sometimes, it lifts you up, doesn't it? It's not so much his doing the dishes, but just having him there, you can talk together, and it just makes life a little merrier. But you know, he goes back and he sits down in his chair. And so that leaves you in there doing the dishes. So you do the dishes, another hour. All right, whenever you come out, it's, oh boy, 9:30. And now it's time to get the kids off. Today? So that's another hour's work maybe for you there. What was he at? He's still in his easy chair. He watched the FBI, Columbo, the careful because of what shows up. All right, so anyway, he's watched all these shows, and finally your work is done, and so you ease into the living room, hoping that maybe you can get just a half hour with him, sitting there and watching maybe a show, or doing a little knitting, just anything, but relax. And no sooner than you get sit down, he says, hey, could you get me a glass of water? All right, now, you're a Christian woman, sitting down to us, going to kiss you. And you know your husband. You've been married to him now for a few years, and you know him, and you know that he likes his water on the rocks. Gotta have those ice cubes. So that means you've got to go into the box and get out the ice cubes, rinse them off, and put them in the glass, put the tray back in. And now, so finally now you're headed back in with the glass of water. Now that's obedience, isn't it? Isn't that what the Bible is talking about when it says that submission, you're the fine housewife. But you know, if we can only see what's going on in your mind as you bring that water back. You know, if we can just read your mind, well then many times we may come up with something like this. Don't see why you didn't get a good one. He had too late just like I did. Of course, nobody knows what you're thinking. But you know what this psychiatrist is saying? She's saying it's important not only to wait on your man, but also the wife to do so. It's interesting, isn't it? But this is the feminine person. Well, this does not mean that you're to be silent at all times. No, you should talk to your husband. There should be a line of communication open. And whenever things bother you, whenever things are not going right, whenever you're displeased about something, then discuss it with your husband. You should be married to the kind of man that you can talk matters over with, regardless of what it is. If it bothers you, if it weighs heavily on your mind, if things are not going right around the house, then why not sit down together and talk it over? You should never be afraid to express yourself to your husband. Sarah was not afraid. On one occasion, she spoke right up to Abraham, and she says to him, you're going to have to do something about this maid, this servant of mine. I can't take it any longer. That's what she said in effect. So Abraham gave her the solution. Sarah worked it out. The problem was resolved. But all it took was just a little communication. Just talking. But you know, if you differ with your man, do it gently. Never with fire in your eyes. There is no man alive who wants his wife right up in his face just yapping, 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 yapping. If you differ, do it again. Never with fire in your eyes. You know, you may be married to a meek and mild and gentle man that will only say, yes, dear, no matter what you say to him, yes, dear.
But you know what you're doing to that man? You're tearing it inside him. Have you ever taken a chicken's gizzard, peeled the inside layer back? You ever done it? You throw that layer away. You know, every time that you get up in a man's face like that, you know what you're doing? You're just ripping his hand right there. And you know what you will eventually have instead of a man? A shame. You know, sometimes we hear sisters say, look, my husband would just take the wound. He tried 20 years ago, but you didn't like him. And in those 20 years, you killed his masculinity. So even if he wanted to take the lead, now he doesn't have the strength to do it. So never do that to your husband. If you differ with him, do it gently. You know, the Bible has so much to say about women. For instance, here in the Bible book of Proverbs, the 31st Proverb, it makes this statement. Verse 15, it says, she also gets up while it is still night and gives food to her husband and the prescribed portion of it to her young women. Do you do that, sisters? Do you get up early? Maybe if your husband has to be at work at 5 o'clock, do you rise at 4? Do you get him off? Do you fry his eggs and his bacon and perk his coffee and make his biscuits? Do you do that? At 4 o'clock in the morning, if he has to be at work at 5, are you up bright and early like that, like the Bible says? It says she also gets up while it is still night. Gets food there. The same thing about him being up. That she gets up. Are you the first one to swing out of the bed in the morning? Is that you in that kitchen rattling those pots and pans? Or is that your husband while you're snug as a bug in the restaurant? Well, you may be married to the kind of man who says, well, honey, you don't have to worry. I'll fix my own breakfast. I'll never say that. But you know, if you would take the initiative and do it willingly, you would enjoy it. You would appreciate it. I venture to say that you can cook better than you can. The average woman can, not every woman, but the average woman can out-cook her husband. And he would appreciate your cooking more so than his. He would appreciate drinking your coffee rather than what he is. Why not try that? The Bible suggests it. It encourages. Well, a man wants his wife to be a good cook, but that does not mean that you have to bake a cake like Betty Crocker. It simply means that you satisfy his hunger, his peace. That's all. There's no competition in comparing this sister with that sister in the congregation. It's just merely feeding your family and causing them to enjoy your cooking. A man wants his wife to be modest in dress. Your dress should never draw undue attention to you. And if you use cosmetics, it should be to enhance your features and never try to perform miracles with them. Sometimes we find sisters with so much pancake makeup on and eyelash material and eyebrows painted on and so many other things you can't find the person. Well, moderation is needed here. And these are things that men look for. He married the inner person, not the outer if he's a Christian man. He wants your clothes to be attractive, but never revealing. Your speech should be respectful of others and your manner dignified. He wants you to be sensible. A woman who is pretty but lacking good sense gives no joy to a man. So as we look back over these fine qualities in you feminine women, we are prompted to say as recorded in Proverbs 18:22, as one found a good wife, one has found a good thing, and one gets goodwill from Jehovah. So in the eyes of your husband, may you forever be a good thing.